Good. So, excellent. So we're going to move into one of the most powerful parts of the event now, a very powerful process. And I'm going to suggest to you that when you do this process in the exercise, that you do not use your manuals. Okay? Do not use your manuals during this process when you actually do it. I'm going to suggest that you'll be able to do it without it. Because in actuality, it's not like chaining anchors where it's like, you know, 70 million steps. It's like, you know, 5 or 6 steps. So you will be able to do it. And I'm going to demo it as well. So you're going to get to see it as well. So we're going to do the NLP Change Personal History technique. And this is very powerful. I have a number of stories to tell you about this one. I've done a few of these. The last time we did this one, we did it with Bouncer, as he was known at the time. And Bouncer has some challenges around his parents and things like that in the past. Very transformational process. I've used it actually with Chris, Pip's son, a version of, to help him really to get a new perspective. And the reason most people have challenges in their life is because what we do is we have a bad situation happens, and then what we happen is we keep it, we store it in ourselves. So we have our own way of, our own personal history, if you like, the way we store history inside ourselves. And it works because, this technique works because you can only experience now. And this is how this works. So when you don't have a problem with your past, if you have a bad childhood, for example, you don't have a problem with your childhood. You can't, because your childhood's gone. What you have a problem with is the way you represent your childhood to yourself now. So therefore, if we change how you represent your past to yourself now, it's done. It changes. And so this works in the same way with lots of the other techniques, except that it's one of those deep techniques, if you like. Now, I've developed it, so I'm going to give you some extra things in this process as well that are basically not traditional NLP, as it were. This is Andy Harrington NLP. So basically what we're doing is, where, if you think about it, the memory itself is a negative anchor, isn't it? So this is a version of a collapse anchors, effectively, except it's just structured in a different way to the sort of really structured collapse anchors technique that you saw me do with Pip yesterday. Because if you think about it, there's no absolute history. Doesn't exist. There's no absolute history. Even if a historian has written up a book, what is he really writing? His interpretation, his own version of what happened. Because even in any situation, even right now in this room, how many different versions are there of what's happening in the room right now? Yeah, as many people there are. Because even as we sit there right now, we say, well, you get a new perspective on things. Well, if you sit in a different position, you get a different perspective, don't you? And you get a different perspective outside as you do inside as well. So there's no absolute history. And what's interesting is, if you think about something that's happened in the past, and you think about it now, the moment you think about it now, you change it. The moment you think about the problem in the past again, you change it in some way. Because what happens is, you've got loads and loads of resources inside yourself that you didn't have back then. So every time you go back and think about it, in some way you change it. So that's kind of how this technique works, by building upon that. Challenge most people have with it is when they go back, they're accessing at the time all shit stuff and keep making it worse and worse and worse every time. So when they think back to it, actually it's a lot worse oftentimes than it actually was in their head. Does that make sense? So what we're seeking is literally take control of what they're already doing and reverse it almost. Because the thing about it is that what holds people back in their personal history more than anything else is the meaning that they attach to the event. What it means. Now, when you were young, for example, if you're talking about personal history that happened to you when you were younger, which it is for most, you would have attached a meaning at the time to what happened. Because as I said before, what's always going on inside you is, what does this mean? What am I going to do? Those two things are happening inside you all the time. What does this mean? What am I going to do? What does this mean? What am I going to do? The whole time. Now, when you're young, do you think you create particularly good, empowering meanings out of things that happen to you? Yes or no? You probably don't, do you? Because listen, you don't have enough references outside yourself for how human beings behave. So what you tend to do is you tend to take it all in and say, it's me. One of the biggest things that happens with abuse, and obviously I know a lot about that from my being in a relationship with Emma, is that what I know for sure is that when she was abused, for example, when she was growing up, the first thing she had when she started dealing with it is, it's my fault. I did it. It's all me. Now, clearly, there's an issue there because there is something she needs to take responsibility for with it. She needs to take responsibility of the fact that it happened and that she... But what she needs to take responsibility for is the meaning that she gave it. That's the responsibility you need to take. But you can't be responsible when you're 4 and 5 years old for being raped, for example. There's not a lot you can do about it, unfortunately. I mean, there is, if you're a very, very strong child, you've got lots of support around you. But if people that loved you, for example, are abusing you and things like that, then there's not a whole lot you can do about it except go into some kind of survival technique to keep yourself alive, basically. Because you do have to go into survival technique to survive when it happens to you. And you use whatever processes you can get away with. You know, you'll do all sorts of things. And frankly, you know, people have been abused, and Emma will bear this out as well, is that if one of the needs that's normally not being met inside a child that's abused is the need for love and connection. It's not being met in a way which is empowering. And so that leaves the child often very open. And that's what those abusers will look for and play for. And they set that environment up, in fact. And then what happens is that the child, for example, then gets abused and gets confused straight away and knows it's not right and wrong and everything else and creates some strange meanings out of it. But at the same time, they get a lot of reward from it at the same time. Because the reward they get is all the connection. If you've been starved of connection, you've been starved of love, and the only time you get it is when you're being abused, guess what your unconscious mind comes up with? It's a bad thing or a good thing? Which one? It's a good thing, absolutely, because it says, you know what? It doesn't feel right, but it's better than nothing. Because they did a study with rats, for example, right? And they put rats into three different sections, three different sort of test environments. The first environment, what they did was, they set up a reward at the end. So if they went over and pressed like a little pedal, the rat got like a little bit of reward, a bit of food. In the second one, what they did was they set the scenario up the same, where there was a reward at the end. But in order to get the reward, it had to walk through some electrodes which zapped the rat as it did it. Okay, and then the third environment was just an empty box. Now, given the choice of the three, obviously, they would always choose the one where they got the reward, the positive reward first. What was interesting was that when they took a whole new set of rats that hadn't been involved in the experiment at all, and then just gave them the two to work with, i.e. one with two with a zapping and number one with nothing, which one do you think they chose? One with the zapping, because there's a reward at the end of it, right? Here's what's interesting. A whole new set of rats now. Whole new set of rats. So hadn't been involved in the experiment before. Same experiment, again, just the last two boxes, but they take the reward out. Now which one do they choose? The same one. So now they're getting zapped and getting no reward for it whatsoever. But they still chose that because it's still better than nothing at all. Because it's stimulation. It shows, you know, somebody cares about you enough to do this to you. I'm being noticed. I'm significant. The worst thing human beings could experience in the world is nothing is being like, you're not worth any of my attention whatsoever. That's the worst thing. So often we'll create all these strange meanings out of these things, because what's really going on is your body and your mind is doing what they believe is right for you at the time. I mean, how do you know, for example, that it would have been better for you, for example, for it to have not happened? Can you know for sure it would have been better in your life for you if you had been abused, that it would have been better for you not to be abused? You can't know that for sure. And the moment, and all the time you believe that it shouldn't have happened and it did, it's painful, isn't it? So what happens is, when people have been abused, change the meaning of the reason why they're abused, and they utilize it and use it as something that meant to happen. It was giving them strength in some way. So while the time they represent in their nervous system, because remember, the meaning comes from the internal representation, which is what we work with. All the time they have the meaning that, for example, and I'm only using an extreme example of sexual abuse, for example, things like that, but obviously there's many types of significant emotional events. But all the time you create a meaning, for example, if you're abused, of like, well, it means that I wanted it, it meant that I'm dirty, it meant that I can't be trusted, and all these bad things, then you're going to go to a certain place as a person that's going to lead you in a certain destination when you have those meanings. But if you change the meaning through an intervention to like, well, I'm stronger than ever was before, and this meant to happen for me because I'm going to use it because I'm going to help other people out there. I understand myself more. Now I have even more compassion for my abuser than I did before, because I now realize it was all about him or her, not me, and it was them that was lacking. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to send them positive feelings of love, because actually in the end it was them that needed it, not me. When you change meanings like that, it changes in a heartbeat. It's just getting the person there that makes the difference. And that's what this technique does. But I've added in some bits that kind of fill in those gaps for you, because this is exactly the sort of thing, and I talk about abuse a lot in this way, because obviously, if you're not already know, obviously you know that Emma was sexually abused when she was growing up, so therefore I do have a number of references and stories directly around how this works. And she'll bear me out that this stuff really, really works. It's all about changing the meaning. And then she's about now to start this year writing her book, God bless her, because she's been, I absolutely know she's been hiding out from it for a long time, and that's why she's been involved in events, getting all involved and stuff. But at the end of the day, she knows her destiny is to go out there, because actually when she looked for out there in the real world for anything specialist on how to deal with abuse, there's not a whole lot out there for it, to be honest. And the stuff that's out there isn't like NLP stuff. It's kind of really old traditional stuff, as in 5 years and it'll be hard and it'll be a long journey and stuff like that. And frankly, that wasn't her experience once she decided. It was a long journey in preparation for getting ready to make the change. Once she decided and she made the few changes that made a difference, it was done in a weekend. Yeah? So, you know, that's what she's going to begin to write a book about. So look out for that. So I've added in some things there that have come from my experience with her. So let's take a look now at the change personal history technique and a little bit how it works. So what we're really looking to do ultimately through this is we're going to change the meaning. If we change the meaning, we change the state, we change the behavior, change the results, change the outcome. And what we really want to do is we want the client to grab some empowering learnings from the event that up until now they haven't been able to get. Because from an unconscious mind point of view, the reason why your unconscious mind keeps representing the problem to you back and forth all the time is because there's something you haven't learned. If you were to learn the thing you needed to learn that you couldn't learn back then because you were 5 or 6, if you were to learn that thing now, the problem would go away. Because the learning would lead to a new meaning. So we're seeking to pick up a new learning that you didn't have before. And the additional thing that I'm adding into this is boundaries. Because for most people, the reason they have a challenge is at the time of the event, they failed to enforce some kind of boundary. That could have been actually a physical boundary, as in, you know, sexually abused or physically abused. Or it could have been an emotional boundary. And because you were whatever age you were, and I'm using 4, 5, or 6, but it, you know, could be any age. Because you failed to enforce your boundary, what happened is you felt controlled by what happened. You felt like other people were doing this to you. Now, obviously at 5 or 6, for example, if someone's abusing you, it's pretty difficult to enforce your boundary to stop it from happening. Especially if you're not really brought, you're probably not going to be brought up in an environment where you've been taught to have a high self-esteem anyway and to trust your own judgment. What you've been taught up until this point is to trust everybody else's judgment except your own, probably. And it starts very early on in life with simple things, as I've probably said to you in the past, with things like, you know, you as a little kid say, you know, your mum says, put your coat on, and you say, I don't want to wear my coat, thanks. You know, I don't want to wear my coat. What does mum say at this point? Put your coat on, it's cold outside. What they're saying is, you don't know, and I do, trust me, don't trust yourself. Now, that's very subtle, and we all do that from time to time, and on a line of continuum, that kind of thing continues and continues and continues to the point where you don't trust your own emotions, you don't trust your own intellect, your own judgment, and you're waiting all the time for somebody else to come along and tell you what to do. And that's why most of you are employed. Isn't it? Because you feel safer waiting for somebody else to come along and tell you what to do, because it's what you're conditioned to do. So, the goal really, you know, in life, if you're bringing up your kids, and one thing that I'm, you know, really proud of, is that, you know, as much as is possible, we let our kids make our own choices. You know, choices that they can make that we feel comfortable about them making, for example, that don't really matter if they get it wrong. I mean, obviously not making choices that would be devastating to them, but even if it meant that choice would have them some level of pain, then we'd let them make that choice. Because then they'll learn, they make their own internal judgment and their own meaning out of things. If you're there to support and coach them, which that's what a good parent is, isn't it? A good parent is a good friend and a good coach, not someone to be dictatorial and tell them what to do. So it could start something simple, couldn't it? You know, by letting them choose what they want to wear. Now, you don't have to go crazy with it, but you could give them a simple choice, like, would you like to wear the red dress today or the blue dress today? Rather than like the mix match of everything. But like now we've done that with my little daughter Gemma, and she's only 4 years old. She dresses herself every single day before I get up. And she looks immaculate every day. She dresses in the most, she has the most beautiful idea of coordination of the things she wants to wear. Even when we don't think it's right and she says she wants to wear it and then she puts it on, we go like, actually that does work. Because she's very sure of herself in that way. And that's a great thing to raise your kids with that kind of self-esteem inside themselves. Beautiful. And so that's how this whole thing came about, because boundaries have not been enforced because you haven't been taught that you can enforce them. Most people in life have problems, frankly, because they don't enforce boundaries. That's the reason we have problems. As in, something happens, and again, even though I've said it, and it's happened this weekend, there's some people here during this week, and over events in the past, where something happens and you tell everybody else except the person you have the problem with. Because that's easy. You can get it off your chest. So what you do is, we get angry and we like, or we hold it inside, for example, and we don't tell the person because of fear of, like, you know, that they might reject us, or, you know, it might not be okay, and all the fear of what might happen. Then what happens is we hold it inside because of that fear, and then somebody that we don't know very well suddenly triggers off our boundary condition. Guess what we do? Rah! Because now it's easy, I can let it out. So we displace our emotion. We displace it onto somebody who's an easy target. But you know what? That's their job in your universe. Their job in your universe is to come along and say, here's something you haven't dealt with. And until you deal with it, it will keep coming up. So until you actually go back to the person themselves that you never enforce your boundary around, until you actually go back and do it with that person, it will keep popping up everywhere you go. And that's what's great about this technique. because it allows you to go back to the very first events that ever happened with, the first event that had the big significant emotional event that set this whole gestalt, as we call it, fired off. If you go back and deal with that, everything else in the world will then disappear, because it's a projection from inside of you. Everybody else you see outside of you is a projection of the problem that you haven't dealt with that you're holding inside. Whose problem is it? It's yours. What you keep doing is you keep saying outside, this is your problem, this is your problem, rather than actually going back and say, this is the problem here. I didn't actually enforce this boundary here. That's the problem.